Checkerfin. Checkerfin.
Porter was always in my head.
Checkerfin. Checkerfin.
Yes.
It's the education gadfly.
Sex, sex.
Mike and Rick tell you
early college, high school,
know about
pain and suffering,
learning and teaching.
In your face, in your face, in your face.
Listen to your words that they be preaching, cause here's the education gadfly show. Yeah. It's the education.
Hello, this is Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. Here with my co-host, the Olympian of the education policy world, Rick Hess.
Hey, Mike. It's good to be back.
Yeah, how are you, Rick?
I'm doing good. I missed you guys. Yeah. I hear Kevin Carey did an admirable job, as always, last week.
He did. And we learned that he is much taller than you.
Substantially taller.
And we discussed how, you know, even though you're actually not that tall of a guy, and yet you have such a big personality and such a big impact on this field that people don't realize it.
Oh, that's very sweet. And so, it's because I frequently stand on a shoebox when I give talks.
People did not know that.
That's trade secret, baby.
So, Rick, you excited about the Olympics? Going to watch a lot of the coverage?
I don't really do Olympics.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that for real?
Yeah, I find it pretty tedious.
Is this like you don't do elections?
Yeah, kind of. But I don't even, but at
what
least
kind of example are you?
Elections I follow. Olympics I don't even really follow. I will follow the Team USA basketball.
Really?
That seems kind of fun.
That's the least interesting part of the Olympics.
Well, which parts are you looking forward to, Bip?
Oh, the swimming is great. The gymnastics.
I got to say, watching swimming, I just don't get it. You don't even see. All you see is like, what, splashing and like those little heads
yeah,
bobbing
it's
along.
It's exciting. Not the distance. It takes too long. But, you know, the short races, it's just fun just watching a race.
Do you even know who these people are?
I have no idea. I mean, I've heard the name Michael Phelps. But you know what else is coming up? Is not one, not two, but three education Olympics events.
Really?
That's right. One hosted by those of us here at Fordham starts on Friday at edolympics.net. The Alliance for Excellent Education is also doing its own Education Olympics programming of some sort. And Ed in 08 has an advertising campaign out there. $5 million, an ad that basically makes the comparison between how well our athletes are doing in Beijing and how poorly our students do internationally.
Well, why do free media Olympics when you can spend $5 million to pay somebody to run your ad?
Yeah, exactly. But it's going to be a lot of fun. And all of you out there, I mean, tune in. Go to edolympics.net right now. Take a look at the video that's there. It's a little bit of a teaser. I think you'll at least get a good laugh. You may ask yourself, I don't understand what this thing is. And we're not sure either. We're going to ride it, Rick. But we're going to be hosting the Education Olympics. You should tune in.
It sounds like a don't miss. And I got to say, I checked out the Alliance for Excellence Education. And it was bizarre. Have you seen this?
I have seen it. It's Bob Wise in a tracksuit.
With a towel over his shoulder, standing in front of what he claims is the bird's nest, but could really be Shea Stadium for all I could tell.
It could be.
Looked like one of those blue screens. Uh-huh. And he was talking on, and there were dots about kids who weren't completing high school. Mm-hmm. I think I fell asleep in the course of 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're somebody who actually reads long books and things like that.
Oof. But it was a lot to kind of get through.
Okay, talking about tedious, let's get going. We've got a lot to cover today. We've got our Pardon Gadfly game that we play. We do that every week.
Do we?
We do. And then we have our Research Minute with Amber Winkler and our Education News of the Weird. So let's get started. Christina, what's the first topic?
What if improving teacher quality isn't the answer that so many reformers believe it to be? Is it possible that even if we do everything right on teacher policy, we're still going to have millions of classrooms with mediocre teachers? Then what?
Well, Rick, what do you think? I understand that I plagiarized your writing last week when I made this argument in the Education Gap.
No, because I think I plagiarized other people and didn't realize it either. So, Mike, you wrote on this last week, right?
Yeah, well, this is the basic argument, is that we should do all the major reforms that are being talked about, including merit pay and paying people more to teach in high-need schools and, you know, opening up the profession to non-traditional candidates, all that stuff, on and on. We should do it, and it should help. And in some cities, like Washington, D.C. or New York, where people want to live, I think it could have a huge impact on the teacher force and on narrowing the achievement gap. But in lots of the country, particularly in rural areas or in urban areas like Dayton, Ohio, that aren't necessarily the it place to live, I think you're going to find that there are still, even if we do everything right, we're still going to have plenty of classrooms with so-so teachers who went to so-so colleges and so-so public schools, and we've got to find a way to make them more effective.
Yeah, I mean, I think the premise is exactly right. We need, as long as we expect to find 3.2 million effective teachers, where we now define the job, we're setting ourselves up for failure. Even the successful efforts, even the new recruitment efforts, even districts that have done a pretty good job of magnetizing this, We've always seen this in the past. We've seen District 2 and District 4 in New York. And part of what you're doing is you're reallocating teachers from other places. You're vacuuming them in to certain locales. Maybe we can get a million good teachers this way. Maybe we can get a million and a half. I don't think we're going to get 3 million plus. What that means is two things. One, we've got to redefine the teaching job so that it's more manageable, so that we're not placing as many burdens on folks. And two, it means we probably want to figure out how we can get by with fewer people who are teachers, as we now think of the term.
Okay. What a strange sounding bell.
Good Lord.
Second topic, Christina.
Rudy Crewe just barely escaped a school board vote to terminate him this week. Some board members charge him with insubordination. Racial politics might also be at play. Is this Exhibit A for why we need mayoral control?
Well, it was a real mess this week, Rick. I guess they had their higher viewership ever on the cable channel that broadcast the school board meetings because they were so full of conflict and fun, some people might say. But yes, Rudy Crewe, who seems to make waves wherever he goes as superintendent. I'm not sure if that's because he's pushing for real changes or something about his personality or something else. Really coming under fire. And many analysts seeing this as largely a racial thing, that the Latino community there in Miami is not a big fan of Rudy Crewe, who's African-American. And that's playing out in this big fight. Of course, you know, this keeps the district not focused on helping kids.
Yeah, you know, I haven't followed the ins and the outs of the situation. The complaint from the board, as I understand it, is that Crewe was not following directions and policies that have been issued by the board. And the reality is, this is the same thing you get from teachers who say, geez, why do I have to teach in ways that I don't necessarily agree with, or why do I have to cover material? The reality is, if you're being paid by the public and you've been hired by the school board and your superintendent, your job is to execute the policies that board passes. And if you don't like them, then you don't. Then you step down from that job. If that's in case, if in fact, what was happening, then I think the board had calls for complaint. But like I said, I haven't followed this close enough to know if that's accurate or not.
But you see these stories of dysfunctional school boards, and you can't help but say, would mayoral control help in this kind of situation? You know, is there something about urban school systems where most of the time the school boards are just not going to be effective?
And I think that, you know, as I've written, I think that is, the reasonable way to bet.
Last one. Fairfax County, Virginia has announced that it will use video cameras to catch lunch line thieves who are stealing food from the district. Rick, didn't you attend Fairfax County schools? Did you ever steal food? And is this going too far?
I did attend Fairfax County schools. Unfortunately, I did steal food. And for that reason, I think this is a perfectly reasonable policy.
Rick Hess, again, not being a very good role model. What kind of food did you steal back in your school days?
You know, I don't remember precisely. I mean, we are talking 2 decades, but I definitely think I remember pinching some donuts.
Mm-hmm.
They talked in the article about kids pocketing burgers and such. I'm sure I did some of that. And the reality is, look, you know, if they're losing over $1 million a year to little punks like me helping themselves to food they didn't pay for, perfectly reasonable to go ahead and monitor this stuff and put an end to it.
All right, so you stole the donuts. Is this something, the donuts were coming from the main cafeteria or someplace else?
I think they were, you know, I think like so many of these big suburban high schools, they had one of the setups where you walk into kind of a cafeteria line.
Right.
And, you know, you're doing the metal, and they have the donuts set out. And I think what we would tend to do is pocket a piece of food and then slide back out the entrance rather than going by the register.
Weren't these donuts being sold as a fundraiser?
They were also. That was a whole different situation. These donuts, I think, were being sold by the calf. But.
Yeah, look, let's bring in the cameras. You know, students should have no expectation of privacy when they're in the cafeteria, right?
They should have an expectation of privacy when they're stealing from the, I mean, you know, I mean, that we're not talking about a private space here.
You know where else I think we need cameras? Every classroom. I think as a parent, I want to sit at home or sit at the office and have a little window open where I could watch my little boy learning all day long, see what's going on in his classroom.
Yeah, I'm not so down with that. On the other hand, I do think there's a difference between instructional spaces and, in cafeterias and parking lots.
All right, we'll talk about that some other day. I don't think this is so unreasonable, and it's going to happen. Let's face it. It's going to happen.
The cameras in the classroom?
The cameras in the classroom, if it's not happening already. Yeah.
Yeah, I want to be the teacher who's got 25 hyper-suburban parents watching me and then calling me that evening to ask me why I asked this question.
Well, this might be a way to get those high-flying suburban teachers to transfer to the inner city where they don't have these cameras.
Why won't they have the cameras in the inner city?
Well, because they don't have the money for them.
The federal program. Actually, I think the federal set-asides would fund the cameras in the inner city and not in the burbs.
I'm just saying if it's the hyperactive suburban parents that want this, that might have the effect of driving teachers out of the suburbs into the inner cities.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying we should look at this policy.
We should certainly talk about it.
All right. And we should look at the research because research matters. And that's why we have brought on the show Amber Winkler's Research Minute.
You search, research, research. It's the Gadfly Research Minute.
I always feel better after listening to that little jingle.
Mm-hmm.
Amber, you ready? 60 seconds.
I'm
we went
ready.
A little over last week.
I'm going to try really hard. Let me just preface by saying it's a slow research week in August around here. So
okay. But the research minute cannot be slow. It's got to come in under 60 seconds.
I'm trying. All righty. This is out of the Center for Education Reform.
Go.
It's the annual survey of charter schools. Came out last month. This is a pro-charter outfit here, so we need to keep that in mind. These are not disinterested observers. Survey went out to 4,100 charter schools, only 20% response rate. But anyway, on to the findings. We have 4,128 charter schools now, a little bit dipped down from last year because of all these moratoriums and caps.
Really?
We've got 17 states that have authorizers other than school boards, thank goodness. Charters enroll 35% less students than conventional schools. Half of these students are at risk, so no, we're not creaming. They operate with 60% less resources than conventional schools. They have waiting lists, typical waiting lists, 50 students. So we've got kids wanting to get into these schools. Most, 62%, say that they increase their instructional time. That's their favorite reform. And then finally, a little bit of question here. 54% say they qualify for free and reduced lunch, their students. But 38% of the schools don't. Now, let me get this in. 38% of the schools don't accept free and reduced lunch dollars. Why, you ask? They don't have a kitchen or a cafeteria. So,
and that's
kind of odd.
Yeah. So, Amber, what's the song that goes along with
well,
this?
Well, I did the song, and this is outside of my 60 seconds, but who has the most charter, a little audience participation here, who has the most charter schools?
Canada.
What state? Come on. We're talking U.S. here.
They're not a state, Mike. That's a country.
Thank you.
Nobody knows.
Arizona.
California.
Second place. Thank you, Rick. So our song for the week, California has 703 charter schools, baby. And so our song of the week is Going to California by Led Zeppelin.
Made up my mind to make a new start. Going to California with an aching in my heart.
I thought it would be 703.
Yeah.
So, by the Black Crowes.
Now, Amber, it actually sounds like a major finding that the number of charter schools has gone down.
Down, yeah.
This must be the first time in charter school history.
Dipped. I think they said 2 percentage points.
I mean, this is huge.
Dipped. But I mean, what I don't get is they were very unclear. I mean, maybe you guys know this, but if you don't have a kitchen or a cafeteria, is it true that you can't accept federal dollars?
That's
that doesn't
not
make
true.
Any sense.
A lot of charter schools don't want that money because it comes with so many ties and red tape.
Yeah,
and so,
but I guess it was the way they skewed it because they didn't make that real clear in the report. They acted like they couldn't take the money because they didn't have a kitchen.
Again, though, I'm shocked, Rick. Charter school movement on the wane.
Mm.
Yeah, a little bit on the wane.
Mm. Okay.
All right. Well, thank you, Amber.
Sure.
I didn't think that was, for an August and all that. I mean, this was an interesting. I mean, Amber got a lot of statistics in there.
Mm-hmm.
In 60 seconds.
70 seconds.
Well, it was 70 seconds. That's true. But, all right, you're right. You're right. We said it's a research minute. We've got to stick to it.
Got to stick to it.
But it's like a baker's dozen, It's like, give
I don't
take.
Know. The extra 10 seconds was all about the original run through on the free and reduced lunch stuff.
Yeah.
And that's confusing. That's even confusing to the research expert.
I know, that's true. That's true. Yeah, it might have gone right over our heads there, Amber. You keep it simple. Just keep it simple.
So
well, it's that time we wait for all week long. Education news of the weird time. With our special correspondent, intern Amy. Intern Amy, it's intern Amy's last week here at Fordham. Last time to do the education news of the weird. So intern Amy, have at it.
Mm-hmm. A teacher in Brooklyn, tired of being harassed by her students, is suing New York City's education department. 48-year-old Teresa Reel filed a federal discrimination complaint after alleging that her reports about her unruly students, who verbally abused her, used racial slurs, threw condoms in the classroom, and threw paper in her face, were ignored. She says that when she filed a report that she had been groped by a student, she received a letter chastising her for wearing a low-cut top, though she asserts she dresses professionally. She says she filed a number of other X-rated complaints that were ignored entirely. District officials said that they are looking into her complaints. Reel assures the media, however, that she fully intends on returning to the classroom this fall.
Yeah, see, this is... This harkens back to the days when we used to have an education outrage of the week. You know, when these kind of stories, they just, you know, you can't laugh at them. They just make you feel yucky.
Cooner would have fired a lot of people here.
He would have fired a lot of people. I think that's right. It is a little bit weird, though, that she's just going straight back to the same classroom that she says she's getting all this abuse in.
Well, we don't know that she's going to the same classroom, right?
Well, I guess that's true. Maybe this year it's a little bit
maybe
better.
Maybe she's going to go teach in Ridgewood.
Yeah. So, intern Amy, what have you learned from your experience this summer here at the Thomas B. Fordham Institute about education policy? Any wise words for our audience?
I've learned a lot, actually. My favorite part of working here was getting to go to all of the events. I went to an AEI event. Mm-hmm. I met a lot of people, and I learned a lot. I watched Obama's and McCain's surrogates talk about their education policies. So
who was smarter?
We're a nonpartisan organization. We can't weigh in on that question. But Amy, do you answer this question? Who throws the best events in town?
Thomas B. Fordham.
Really?
Definitely.
Is that right? Oh, that's...
So where are you headed back to, intern Amy?
Virginia Tech. I'm a rising senior there.
A rising senior.
And a rising star.
Better than being a falling senior.
Okay. Well, intern Amy, it's been a pleasure having you here. And we will miss you. And Rick,
yes.
We're going to keep plowing through. You know, people might say it's August. You should just give it up. There's nothing to talk about in education. But they are wrong because you know what's coming. Mm-hmm. The Education Olympics, mm-hmm. www.edolympics.net. Daily coverage, actually up-to-date, hourly coverage of these exciting events. Follow along, people.
Featuring Mike Petrilli's unseemly fascination with 50-yard butterfly swimming.
Well, not exactly, but yes, something like that. Okay, well, till next week, I'm Mike Petrilli.
I'm Rick Hess.
Wait, let's do that again. Until next week.
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, signing off.